So good morning. Well, it was mentioned several times that usually maximum likelihood methods or Bayesian methods work better than maximum parsimony methods. But in alignment, it's still quite common to use sort of parsimony methods because we always try to optimize the score of an alignment, and this is not model based. And another point is that when you do some Bayesian analysis for a phylogenetic tree, as for example is done with the program Mr. Bayes, then you maybe would like to assess the variability in this tree reconstruction. But this is usually done with a fixed alignment. And if you really want to assess the whole variability, then you also have to somehow take the variability of the alignment into account. And this is why it would be nice to have a Bayesian sampling method for multiple alignments, maybe even together with the phylogenetic trees. And here's the outline of my talk. First, I will discuss some insertion and deletion methods, which might be a base for such a method. Then I will discuss their behavior in the context of multiple alignments, and what I will then say about Bayesian sampling of multiple alignments is best described with two words I borrowed from the title of this conference, the Challenges of Problems, because I think there's still no efficient software, and we still have to try if it is possible to do that. But we start with the models. The first model for which takes insertion and deletions into account was the model by Thornkirchen and Felsenstein from 91. And it's quite simple. You just start with a sequence of geometric length, and then each position can be deleted with some rate mu. Between each pair of neighboring positions, there can be insertions at some rate lambda, and there's also a substitution model going on. And this is how sequences evolve in time. And well, this somehow equips the space of possible evolutionary histories with probability distribution. And in order to also equip the set of possible alignments of two sequences with a probability distribution, you have to map this process somehow to the set of possible alignments. And in some, well, it's usually quite obvious how this is done, but there are some special cases where this has to be clarified. For example, here this G is deleted, and then at its place a C is inserted, and this could be in principle denoted like this, CG, or like that, GC. And to clarify the notations, well, we always assume that a newly inserted position is a child of its left neighbor, and then we group these families together. So this is the right way to do it in the convention of Thornkirchen and Felsenstein. And this has a very nice consequence because it makes the alignment when we produce it by such a process and then read it from left to right a Markov chain. It equips this with the structure of a Markov chain. This means, for example, if you want to simulate data, now you don't need to simulate this process in time in your computer. You just can jump around on this graph here with in a Markovian fashion, and then you get this chain. And the transition probabilities, well, they of course depend on the insertion and deletion rates. I don't want to go into the details here. And of course, this does not only help to simulate data, it also helps to analyze data because we have the structure of a hidden Markov model, which means, well, this sequence, which we of course do not observe, emits then the nucleotides or the amino acids. And this is what we observe, and then we can apply dynamic programming techniques known for hidden Markov models, and we can quite efficiently, for example, find the most probable alignment or for a given basis, or sample an alignment according to its posterior probability. What's not so nice about this first model is that you only have insertions and deletions of single positions, but there is another model which covers also the fact that usually, fragments of not just one positions are inserted and deleted. And this was, the first one was the model which Thornkirchen and Felsenstein published 1 year later. and they just instead of that it has the same structure as the first model, but it's not only single positions that are inserted and deleted, but fragments of geometric length. I like to use a slightly simplified version of this model where the insertion and deletion rate are the same. And in order to make this model again, equip this model again with the structure of a hidden Markov model, you have to forbid a few things. You have to assume that these inserted fragments are fixed. They're sort of atoms. That means that it's forbidden that a part of it is deleted in one step. If it's deleted, it's deleted as a whole. Otherwise, you won't have a hidden Markov structure in this model. And then you can't analyze data efficiently. But of course, you can specify such a model where this is allowed. I call it general insertion deletion model. And you can simulate data and test if you can still apply the methods which are based on the FID model, on the fragment insertion deletion model, with fixed fragments, give good results. And this took some time, and it turned out that if you, for example, want to estimate the distance between the sequences, between underlined sequences by this FID model, and the sequences are in fact produced as a GID model, then it's no problem. The parameter estimates are quite well. But Miklos, Lunta, and Holmes, they considered a similar model like this general ID model, and they found that the alignment accuracy can be decreased. A possible explanation for this would be that in this more general model, the gap length distribution is not geometric, it's a bit more long-tailed, and maybe we can somehow generalize this fragment, fixed fragment models by having two types of fragments. Each has geometric length, but they're different in the parameters, so that you get a mixed geometric gap length distribution. And this would also be compatible with the Markov structure, and maybe it would improve the alignment accuracy. Well, we've not done this, but we have a similar model where you have sort of slow evolving fragments. They are not inserted or deleted at all. They're just substitutions on that. And between them, we have we have this Thonkishino Felsenstein 92 model going on. And this model, for example, can be used to find conserved regions in analyzed data, and it works quite nicely. And now I come to the more interesting point of multiple alignments. And now it's much more inefficient to do this. We know that multiple alignment methods are always more time-consuming, but I think the first ones who tried to somehow transfer this hidden Markov mechanism to multiple alignment were Holmes and Bruno in 2001. And what they basically do in their method is, given such a tree, they estimate for the internal nodes, they estimate sequences, and then the whole alignment of all these exterior sequences is based on pairwise alignments of the sequences in the nodes, and they have a Gibbs sampling procedure where they update these alignments at the nodes, and we try to do a similar thing. Well, this is based on the Thonkishino-Felsenstein model of 91 with the single positions, and we try to generalize this for the model with longer fragments, which is, a bit more time-consuming, and we also, in this paper, we have a simulated annealing strategy for jointly for the tree and the alignment, and this involves, for example, re-estimating also the sequences at internal nodes given the alignments of the neighboring sequences, and there are a lot of sort of multiple hidden Markov models around, and this is just a slightly scary picture of such a model which is involved in that. But in fact, Lunter, Miklos, Son, and Hein from Oxford have found a much nicer and much more systematic way to analyze these models in which are these models along with the tree evolution for these hidden Markov models. And the starting point is a new notation for pairwise alignments, which they suggest, and it's a one-line notation of alignments. And it's just if a position is inserted, then it's denoted as B, like, I guess, like birth, probably. Then if a position is deleted, like here, then it's denoted by an E, probably like extinct. Homologous positions are denoted as by H. And then there's a special case. You would never write, for example, here, EB. This is always replaced by an N. So if a position is deleted, but it had an surviving offspring, then it's just summarized as N. And well, then you can, if you have a sequence evolving along a tree, you can, of course, use this notation to, along all edges, to specify how these sequences are all related, which positions are homologous. But now if you want to somehow denote the alignment of the sequences at the tip, you need again a sort of this Thorngeschner-Felsenstein convention. You have to clarify which is denoted left and which is denoted right in the alignment. This is only in a few cases essential. For example, if we split these all little subtrees, which we call tree indexed hairs lines, if you split it from left to right, then it might happen that something is inserted here at this node number 3, this one, this guy, somewhere here, and something is inserted here at this node number 6. And then it must be clarified which is denoted left and which is denoted right. And in this case, you just number the nodes of the tree in such a way that a child always gets a lower number than its parent. And then the lower number has always the priority. And this has an interesting consequence if you clarify this notation like that. Because, if something is inserted here, then in the next one, it is not possible that something is inserted there. Because, otherwise it would have been, as in this case, denoted to the left of it. So this means that when you read it from left to right in this way, an insertion at this node somehow inactivates this node. Okay? It's a bit strange, but that's how it is. Let's look at this process along with the tree. Let's assume something is inserted here, and it has offspring there and there. This is homologous positions. This is not very embarrassing. But if something is inserted here at the root, and it does not have offspring here and not there, then in the next step, nothing could be inserted here because it would have been denoted left of it. In this sense, this node and also this node are inactivated. And they can be activated again if there is some position coming to this node. And so we have a funny process of activation and deactivation. For example, this insertion here has deactivated this whole tree, because if anything had been inserted here in the next step, it would have been denoted at the left of it. And this goes on. And, in fact, these sets of active nodes, which we call zones for short, they are the Markov structure in this multiple alignment thing. And this was done with slightly different terms by this Oxford group with around Jotun Hein and for the 91 model. And what you get then is by looking at the forward equation for this Markov chain, you again get a sort of recursive formula which can be used to do dynamic programming algorithms. But the complexity, for example, to compute the probability of a sequence to be generated with that model is the product of the sequence length. So we have to speak later about some ideas to speed up this process. And what we are trying to do is to transfer this to the industrial model with longer insertions and deletions, the fragment insertion deletion model, or the Thorngeschner-Felsenstein model of 92. Remember, it's forbidden that a fragment that has been inserted is deleted partly. It can only be deleted as a whole. But we only want to have this restriction on each edge of the tree. So a fragment that is inserted in some edge of the tree is free to do what it wants anywhere else. It can also be deleted as in parts. And we try to find the structure of a hidden Markov model also for this model. And in fact, you just need to keep track of some more information. It's not just activation and deactivation of nodes. You have to you have to remind of what happened before this node. So it can be that, for example, here there was a homologous pair of bases here as well. There also, here was a birth, and well, we denote this by a small b to say this is deactivated. So active always means capital letters, and small letters mean deactivated. So we have, in fact, we need five different letters for each edge, and it's capital B, and for birth, and this for insertion, this for homologous pair, this for deletion, and these again for insertion and homologous pair, but these are deactivated. Well, and if something happens, for example, here, like this, with this tree next airs line, if something is inserted here and it's deleted there and someone goes there, then this changes the labeling of this tree. And in fact, one can show that the this labelings, they are the Markov process. They are the Markov chain. They form a Markov chain, the labelings for this tree. And we get a similar formula as before, but of course, there's several more different states. For example, if you just have a tree, an unrooted tree with three leaves, then there are eight possible sets of active nodes if you apply the Felsenstein model of 91. But if you want to apply this thing, then there are 125 possible labelings around, and 41 of them are relevant for the process. So it's even more time-consuming to compute this. Well, and the last part, challenges, I would just give some ideas what could be done. Jensen and Hein have shown that it's more efficient instead of just resampling only edges, the alignment of edges, to resample alignments of such star-shaped subtrees. And well, this is also what we want to try for the fragments model. And because it's still quite time-consuming to do that, we don't want to do it for the whole sequences. Remember, the time consumption is the product of the sequence length. We just want to do it subsequently for parts of the sequences. So we want to update parts of the alignment. And there are some questions around. For example, there are sort of non-emitting events, which means there are some. Is it possible that some positions are inserted in the tree but don't have any homologous partners in the tips of the tree? Maybe this can be ignored. This would, this would accelerate computations a bit. This must be investigated once we have the program ready. And another thing is, one could think about assigning sequences, really sequences, to the internal nodes and change them during the sampling strategy. Or one could also use just sort of wildcards, which have then some nucleotide or amino acid distributions. And one has to check if which of the two options is better. And it would also be nice to, of course, combine this with phylogeny estimation. But this would mean that, for example, one could do some nearest neighbor interchange steps for the phylogeny, and then one would have to realign these sequences because there are new nodes inserted. And for example, this could be done conditioned on the alignment of these four nodes, because then it's otherwise it's not it's just not doable. So my conclusions are, it would be really be nice to have such a method, because this would help us to really assess the full uncertainty in alignment and phylogeny reconstruction. But I can't show real results of how it works, because we first have to get the software ready, and this is what all of us should do. And so I would like to thank you for your attention and your knowledge.